Welcome to Ekatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome, everyone. Today we're diving deep into a really significant novel, Abdulrazak Gurnah's Paradise from 1994. Gurnah, as you might know, won the Nobel Prize in Literature back in 2021.
That's right. And the Nobel Committee specifically praised his uncompromising and compassionate penetration of the effects of colonialism and the fate of the refugee.
And Paradise, I think, is where you see that so clearly. It's powerful stuff.
It really is a cornerstone work. Gurnah, who was born in Tanzania and came to the UK as a refugee himself, well, he just weaves that complexity of displacement and history into everything he writes.
And Paradise plunges you right into East Africa.
What?
When exactly? Turn of the 20th century?
Yeah, precisely. It's that pivotal moment, you know, just as the old world structures are starting to crumble under the pressure of incoming European power.
So we're talking about the coast, the interior, a real friction point where German colonialism is making its presence felt.
Exactly. It's a time of massive upheaval, disrupting these centuries-old networks, Swahili Arab traders, local African societies, all intricately connected.
And into that really turbulent setting, Gurnah uses a familiar structure, doesn't he? A Glutungsroman.
He does. It's fundamentally a coming-of-age story.
Yeah.
We follow a young character's education, their formation, but the education Yusuf receives here is, well, it's brutal.
It makes you ask right from the start, what does it mean to come of age when your whole world is basically collapsing around you?
That's the core question.
So let's introduce Yusuf. He's 12 years old when the story kicks off, and the opening. It seems simple, but it's just devastating. His father, struggling financially.
Mm-hmm. A hotelier in debt. Deeply indebted to this powerful merchant, known as Uncle Aziz.
And to settle this debt, Yusuf is handed over.
Given away. But not just as a servant. And this is crucial. He's given as Rahani.
Rahani. Can you unpack that a bit?
Yeah, it's a specific term Gurnah insists on. It means collateral.
Yeah.
Indentured servant, maybe, but really a human bond. Property held against a debt.
So he's literally currency.
Essentially, yes.
Mm.
He might be redeemed if the debt's paid. But if not, he's owned. Permanently. The psychological weight of that is immense.
Which sets up the central question we'll be exploring, the one the novel keeps asking. Can anyone find freedom, find their own paradise, when life is dictated by debt, power, and, frankly, violence?
And Gurnah provides no easy answers. Mm. Not at all.
Okay, let's trace Yusuf's journey. Part one. He arrives in this coastal town, starts working in Aziz's shop, and initially he's just completely naive.
Utterly. He genuinely thinks it's some kind of apprenticeship, you know, a temporary thing. He's sort of fascinated by the bustle, the relative comfort compared to home.
He still has that child's hope of going back to his parents eventually.
Right. And this household, this shop, it's a microcosm of the whole system. It runs on these intricate debts and obligations. And, well, human commodification is just part of the reality.
But that naivety doesn't last long, does it? He meets Khalil.
Khalil, the older Rihani. He's the cynic, the realist. He's been trapped in the system long enough to know exactly what it is.
A cage, not a classroom.
Precisely. And he makes it his business, almost cruelly sometimes, to shatter Yusuf's illusions about ever going home. Their bond is complicated, shared servitude, but different experiences of it.
And amidst all this, Yusuf discovers the garden.
Yes, the walled garden behind Aziz's house. Initially, for Yusuf, it's this vision of, well, paradise, right? Lush, fragrant, mysterious, forbidden.
Associated with the mistress, Aziz's unseen wife.
Mm-hmm. But the moment you, the reader, understand its real function, it's her beautiful prison, a place of seclusion.
The irony hits you hard.
Yeah.
It's another cage, just a prettier one.
And that's classic Gurnah. Constantly linking beauty with confinement, the ideal with the harsh reality. It's an early lesson for Yusuf, even if he doesn't fully grasp it yet.
Okay, let's move to the core of the novel, really. Part two, the caravan journey. This is huge.
It really is the central turning point. Aziz leads this massive trading expedition deep into the interior, and Yusuf goes along. This is his real, raw education.
What's that journey like? Gurnah's descriptions are incredible here.
Oh, they are. It's visually stunning, but also brutal. You have the stark contrast, the sheer scale of it. Merchants, guards, porters, animals, like a moving city, and the landscape.
Towering mountains, dense forests.
Exactly. Breathtaking beauty. But layered over constant danger. Disease is rampant. Death is common. They face hostile groups, like the terrifying Chatu tribe.
But there are moments of peace, too, right? Like the community led by Hamid.
Yes, that almost idyllic interlude. But even that contrasts with the brutality elsewhere. What Yusuf learns is the sheer complexity of the pre-colonial world. It wasn't simple.
There were already intricate power dynamics, debts, alliances, conflicts between different groups long before the Europeans showed up in force.
Absolutely. Gurna completely dismantles any romantic notion of a peaceful, untouched Africa. Yusuf sees the webs of power firsthand.
And somewhere in all this, the first signs of the Germans appear.
Yes, deep in the interior. These rumors, these fleeting glimpses of the red-jeaned men with guns. It's ominous. You feel the shadow falling, the disruption of the old ways beginning.
So this journey is Yusuf's loss of innocence, writ large across the landscape.
Completely. His personal coming of age mirrors the historical shift happening to his whole world. He goes back to the coast, physically stronger, yes, but changed, melancholic, burdened.
And when they return part three, the coast itself has changed too, hasn't it? The German presence is more obvious now.
Much more assertive. No longer just rumors. They're visible. They're making demands. It sets the stage for the final act, the personal climax.
Which revolves around the mistress, Zuleika.
Right. Yusuf is assigned to work in her garden, her prison, really. And he finally sees her. Sees her disfigurement, understands her tragedy, her confinement.
She's trapped, trying to exert power in the only way she can. By targeting Yusuf?
Yes. She's drawn to his youth, his unspoiled nature, perhaps, and she attempts to seduce him. This is where Gurna explicitly invokes that older story.
The story of Joseph and Potiphar's wife, Zuleika.
Exactly. The parallels are deliberate, but Gurna twists it. In the Quran and Bible, Joseph resists, is falsely accused, but ultimately vindicated and rewarded by God.
But not Gurna's Yusuf.
No. Yusuf rejects Zuleika, but more out of a kind of pity and fear, maybe confusion, and his reward. A savage beating from Aziz, fueled by her false accusation that he assaulted her.
So the old myths offer no protection here, no divine justice.
It seems not. In this world shaped by commerce and looming colonialism, those frameworks seem to fail. And right after the beating comes the final blow.
Aziz tells him the truth about the debt.
Mm-hmm. The debt is too big.
Right.
It will likely never be repaid. Yusuf is rehani for life. Permanent property.
Just crushing. And this personal devastation happens right as the world outside explodes.
Precisely. World War I breaks out. The Germans are now actively conscripting African men, the Askaris, into their colonial army, the Schutztruppe.
Which brings us to that incredibly ambiguous ending. Yusuf sees the soldiers marching.
And he runs, away from Aziz's compound towards the Askaris. He joins them.
What do we make of that? Is it a choice? Is it freedom?
That's the agonizing question Gurna leaves us with. It's surely an escape from Aziz, from that specific bondage. But he's running towards another form of servitude, arguably even more brutal and anonymous.
Trading one owner for another, basically.
Perhaps. Is it a desperate grab for some kind of agency, even if it's agency within a system designed to kill him? Or is it just resignation? Choosing the terms of his own commodification, maybe?
Yeah.
It's profoundly tragic because there's no real free choice available.
Let's unpack the big themes then, the title itself. The illusion of paradise. We talked about the garden.
Right, the beautiful cage. But the illusion runs deeper. Yusuf's own idealized memories of home, shattered when he realizes his father sold him. The paradise of the untouched interior, revealed as a place of sickness and violence.
So any idea of a perfect world, past or present, is shown to be a myth built on exploitation.
That seems to be Gurna's point. Paradise is always constructed, usually at someone else's expense.
Which ties into the theme of commerce and dehumanization. Yusuf's entire life trajectory is determined by a debt he had nothing to do with.
Exactly. People as assets. Mm-hmm. Fungible goods. That's the logic of the system he's trapped in.
And Gurna contrasts the old system with the new one coming in, right? The European system.
Yes, that's a subtle but crucial point. The Swahili Arab system, based on debt and obligation, could be lifelong servitude, like Yusuf's situation with Aziz. It's personal in a way, however exploitative.
But the incoming European model
is presented as perhaps more efficient, more organized, but also more brutally impersonal. It doesn't need your lifelong service as much as it needs your body for labor or war, disposable units.
So Yusuf moves from being lifelong property to being cannon fodder, a different kind of dehumanization.
Which is worse. Gurna doesn't necessarily say, but he forces you to see the terrible continuity and the shift in how human lives are valued, or rather devalued.
And we have to touch on the clash and intersection of cultures. Gurna avoids easy binaries.
Absolutely. He shows East Africa, before the Germans arrived, in force as already this incredibly complex tapestry. Arab traders, Indian financiers, diverse African groups, the coastal Swahili culture blending elements.
The Germans didn't bring complexity. They brought a simplifying, violent force.
A steamroller, essentially.
Yeah.
Treating all these existing intricate systems, cultural, religious, economic, as obstacles to be crushed for European benefit, Gurney gives dignity to all these groups, showing them caught in this historical vice.
And the way he tells the story, that literary craft, the restricted viewpoint is so effective.
It really is. We learn as Yusuf Lawrence, we feel his confusion, his dawning horror, because we only see what he sees, understand what he understands. It makes his journey incredibly intimate for the reader.
You feel his vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. And that secularized Joseph story we talked about emphasizes the shift. In this modern colonized world, maybe the old divine narratives just don't provide answers or solace anymore. The tragedy is human, historical.
What stays with you most, perhaps, is that feeling of melancholy. It's sad, but not necessarily angry.
I think that comes from the complexity of the characters. Aziz isn't just a villain. Zuleika isn't just a victim or temptress. They are flawed people trapped in their own histories, their own constraints. They exploit, yes, but they're also products of the system.
So no easy judgments.
No, just this profound sense of loss and the weight of history on individual lives.
So the final thought for the listener, what does Paradise leave us wrestling with?
I think it forces us to ask what freedom can possibly mean when every path seems constrained. And maybe, just maybe, finding some inner core of dignity, refusing to be entirely defined as property, is the only real resistance possible.
The novel teaches us that history is never simple, and that the search for dignity, even in the face of permanent constraint, is the most profound human struggle.
Well said.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.